Wisconsin's 30th Assembly District is unusual in many ways. It's one of the most densely populated and smallest geographic districts in western Wisconsin. It's also the only Assembly District located entirely within the Twin Cities metropolitan area. Those characteristics create some specific challenges for the state representative elected to that seat, and we'll spend the next hour with the two people hoping to win that election in November. It's our 30th Assembly District candidate debate on the West Side. And a good morning to you. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Our guest candidates today are Sarah Yacoub. She has a background as an attorney, having formerly worked for the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office in California. She now lives in Hudson with her husband and children. Sarah Yacoub, thank you for joining us.
Hello, Dean. Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Shannon Zimmerman. Shannon Zimmerman founded a language translation company in River Falls that eventually went public. He and his wife also own a River Falls winery with his son and daughter-in-law. He was first elected to the Assembly in 2016. Shannon Zimmerman, good to have you along on the West Side.
Thank you very much, Dean. Good to be here.
The 30th District contains parts of St. Croix County and Pierce County. The cities of Hudson and River Falls are included in the district, as well as the villages of North Hudson and Roberts. Also part of the district are the St. Croix County towns of Hudson, Troy, St. Joseph, Richmond, Kinnickinnick, and Warren, as well as the Pierce County town of River Falls. So you can join the conversation by calling with your questions at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615, or email ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. So let's begin. Sarah Yacoub, this is your first run for state office. Why would you like to represent the 30th Assembly District?
Yes, thank you, Dean. I am running because as a mother in this community, person of faith, I am not wired to sit idly by and watch the issues facing not only our children, but our community. And I am committed to working to do something about it. My experience as a deputy district attorney, public defender, and now nonprofit attorney serving survivors of trauma and working families in the community at no cost has given me a front row seat to the barriers to well-being, quite frankly, trauma being one of them. I bring the courage to have hard conversations and the tenacity to work through those challenges. I also bring a willingness to put aside the partisan gridlock and get to work for the people of Wisconsin. Right now, we have a representative who seems more interested in playing partisan political games than doing right for the people in our district, and that needs to change.
Shannon Zimmerman, you've held the seat now for two terms since 2016. Why run for a third term?
Well, Dean, you know, first of all, having lived in this community now, I grew up, born and raised in Wisconsin, lived in this community for approximately 25 years. This is home, and, you know, I've raised kids here. I have grandkids here. As you mentioned, started a business here. You know, both my wife and I come from, I guess what I would say is very modest, which is a nice way of saying poor, roots and beginnings. And we're very fortunate to build a company here and to get to know so many of the wonderful people that live in this community. At the start of this, you talked about how unique River Falls, Hudson, the western part of Wisconsin is, and nothing could be more true. Economically, you know, the diversity here with university being here and so forth. So for me, when I first ran in 16, you know, my objective was then and remains still to bring kind of a common sense, more of a business philosophy to government, because as I speculated then and have since confirmed, government does not and is not built to run efficiently and sometimes effectively. So running again for a third term this past cycle, I was appointed to the Joint Committee on Finance. That was a wonderful experience, digging deep into the state's budget, learning about how things operate, identifying and finding opportunities to help our taxpayers locally. Also did some great things for the university. So I want to finish that work. You know, this is not, I think, you know, this is not something people should do forever. I think there should be term limits, but there's a few things left undone that I want to finish for my neighbors in this community.
Well, we've got calls right from the start. Let's go to Steve in Hudson. Steve, thank you for joining us. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Dean. Thanks for having me on. My question for both candidates is, there's been some talk about, I guess, with all the, you know, events occurring in the past couple of months about defunding the police. And I'm just wondering if either of the candidates would support defunding the police at the state level if they were elected.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Sarah Yacoub, let's start with you. Defunding police, what's your position?
Absolutely not. If anything, we need to invest more in the training and resources for our officers. You know, officers are among those most susceptible to secondary trauma, given how they respond and that they are very often first on scene to very traumatic situations. So if anything, we need to invest more in our law enforcement to give them the tools to be at their best. But we also need to hold bad apples accountable. And Steve, I appreciate this question. Right now we have some bad apples that are really giving our men and women in uniform a bad name, and they're overshadowing the sacrifice and the good work that they're doing for our community to keep us safe and to maintain trust in the community. And one of the contrasts between my opponent and I, my opponent is fundraising with David Clark, the disgraced former sheriff out of Milwaukee, somebody who let a mentally ill man die by denying him water for 7 days. Dehydration is one of the most painful, cruel ways to kill somebody. He used to shackle pregnant women when they were in labor, and he's somebody who is just so extreme that even Fox News said thanks but no thanks when given the opportunity to work with him. So I will stand up for right in the face of wrong. I will have the hard conversations to hold law enforcement accountable. But as a former deputy district attorney, someone who has worked with some of the best local, state, and federal law enforcement that we have, I so much appreciate the sacrifices and the hard work of our men and women in uniform.
Shannon Zimmerman, same question to you that Steve from Hudson shared. What about defunding police? Is that something you favor?
Steve, great question. Absolutely not. And first of all, I think that when I look around locally, and I do feel privileged in this role to have the opportunity to work directly with the sheriffs, the chiefs, and many of those who protect us here. I have long been a strong proponent and huge supporter of law enforcement. I mean, if you think about it, right, these are the folks that are running into doors that most of us are running out of. They are underappreciated. I think that when you look at some of the national challenges that we have had and some of the things we have seen even regionally and within the state, I've been a firm believer. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And there has long been, I think in every single profession, the law of averages prevails. You're going to have some people who do some things wrong. And those are the people that need to be dealt with. But what we don't want to do is take a broad brush and then weaken what is a vital, vital part of our community. Just briefly to my opponent's comment there, actually I'm not fundraising. I'm attending an event because there's going to be hundreds of law enforcement supporters there. I don't choose the speakers. Somebody else does, but I'm proud to stand with St. Croix County Sheriffs, our chiefs, and our local law enforcement, and do so. So I think that, we do need to apply more resources to our law enforcement, training, what have you, my local ride-alongs. I talk to law enforcement. We've got a great community. They do a great job for us. I will continue to have their back.
This relating to the whole conversation about defunding police, which, of course, came to the forefront with the death of George Floyd Memorial Weekend in Minneapolis. Now we have the Jacob Blake shooting and subsequent protests and violence in Kenosha. Governor Evers called a special session of the legislature to consider bills dealing with police reform. Republican lawmakers who hold the majority in both the Assembly and the Senate immediately recessed that session earlier this week rather than deal with any legislation. That same result came last fall when Governor Evers called a special session for gun control issues. Shannon Zimmerman, did you support your party's decision to ignore the police reform proposals proposed by the governor?
So I have been fairly vocal about this. This is, number one, a complex. It is an emotional subject. It is an important subject that needs to be addressed, period. It is also, in my opinion, crucial that we get it right and not just get it fast. When you think about just the influences on some of the things that we have seen in certain cases, it could be, as described, maybe a bad law enforcement representative. In other cases, it could be racially influenced. It could relate to poverty or an array of other things. I support getting all the right people at the table to talk about it, to hear testimony from those involved in all facets, in all forms, and from there develop legislation that actually has legitimate capability of, you know, solving some of these challenges. You know, you take, for example, we talk about chokeholds. It's something that's come up recently. In a recent ride-along with the River Falls Police Department, I asked the officer I was with, I said, you know, talk to me about this. Is this trained? Is this taught? And the answer was no. I mean, we don't do that. We've evolved. We've come so far. So, you know, law enforcement's doing their part locally, but I think it's important to follow the recommendation of the speaker, get the task force put together. Let's get everybody in the room and devise some legislation that actually makes sense and solves part of these issues.
Sarah Yacoub, you've indicated you're in favor of supporting local law enforcement as part of your Safe Communities campaign priority. What does that mean, though, in the wake of the Jacob Blake shooting and the partisan divisions over policing reform?
Yes, this needs to not be a partisan issue. Going back to what we just heard from my opponent, in the words of Joe Biden, this is malarkey. My opponent has not participated in any community conversations with any Black Lives Matter groups or anybody affected by police misconduct or that which is precipitating the need for police reform. You know, we saw what happens when our GOP legislators do a task force. They did it recently with the water task force. We spent quite a bit of taxpayer money to learn things we already knew and things that were already proposed in Governor Evers' plan and budget, and that ultimately those same GOP legislators refused to accept and move forward on. So when you hear task force, that is Republican speak for kick the can down the road, and we can't afford to do that right now. You know, it's really unfortunate to hear that from my opponent. He said he's running for a third term to get to work. So get to work. What has it been, 130, 140 days since they've gone to work? We have the research. We have the data. We know how to move law enforcement along in a way that makes them safer, that makes the community safer. And there's absolutely no excuse for their failure to go to work. You know, they are continuing to collect a taxpayer-paid paycheck. Right now, my opponent's getting paid for being our representative. And yet he has not gone to work. That is a colossal failing of leadership and is among the reasons I'm so passionately running for office.
That's the voice of Sarah Yacoub. She's the Democrat from Hudson running for the 30th Assembly District. Her opponent is the current holder of that position, Republican Shannon Zimmerman. He's on the line with us as well. I have enough questions prepared to fill the hour, but what do you want to hear from the candidates? You can't call right now because our lines are full, and we'll be getting to those questions after the break. But as somebody drops off, you can call with your question at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on the West Side with the 30th Assembly candidates, incumbent Republican Shannon Zimmerman of River Falls, Democratic challenger Sarah Yacoub of Hudson. Let's go back to the phones now. We have Kim. Kim is with us from the town of Troy. Kim, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you. Thank you. My question is about health care funding. The more the government inserts itself into our health care, the more opaque prices and options become to patients, and the more opportunity there is for hospital companies and their lobbies to game the payment system. All this just removes agency and authority from the actual patients, the citizens, and the healthcare professionals that they work with. So how can we get government out of that, get all the bureaucrats and insurance companies and so forth out of that so that people can drive decisions for themselves?
Sarah Yacoub, affordable health care is the top priority on your campaign website. What policies would you support as a legislator to improve access, affordability, and quality of health care in Wisconsin?
Yes, and thank you, Kim, for calling in and for that question. There's quite a bit of fear-mongering here, and it's an important issue to address. Right now, we have $1 billion of federal relief funds that would give access to tens of thousands of Wisconsinites in Wisconsin. We are in the middle of a pandemic. We are all in this together. We need our neighbors to have access to health care to get through this. You know, if you look at a purely free market approach to health care, the insurance companies have an absolute incentive to never provide care. And anyone who is experienced insurance companies, I did certainly as a mother and as a young mother getting back to work and trying to get my insurance company to support me and getting back to work, you'll find that you're just beating your head against the wall. And that's because they are for-profit companies and their bottom line is making profits for their shareholders, which is, you know, what you would expect for a business. And so in order to pick up those who cannot have access to healthcare on their own, you know, we're not a country that leaves people to die on the steps of a hospital. We take care of people. What happens then is taxpayers pick up the tab. You know, this ties back into the discussion we were having earlier. You know, you can't really say you support law enforcement when you reject $1 billion in federal Medicaid expansion funds. What that does is deny mental health care access to tens of thousands of Wisconsinites. What happens then is that people who suffer from mental health, you know, don't get the resources they need. They don't get the support that they need through the healthcare system. And too often, so sadly, they end up intersecting with the criminal justice system, a system that was never designed to handle mental health care or those issues. And that falls squarely on the shoulders of our law enforcement to try to handle. So for so many reasons, we need to invest in our health care. You know, if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's that we cannot afford to be in the minority in the world of healthcare systems that tie healthcare to employment. It stifles entrepreneurship, it stifles small businesses, and in a time of economic crash that we're seeing now with the pandemic, people are losing their access to healthcare. And we haven't yet seen the full effects of that, but it's going to keep coming. So to try to stop the bleed, to try to move forward on this, I have a vision for investing in the healthcare, investing in the mental healthcare, the addiction care for our people, so that we can start having healthy people to create a healthy economy. If you look at my opponent's record, he simply has demonstrated over and over again that this is not a priority for him. He doesn't have a vision to move us through this pandemic, and it just simply isn't on his radar.
Shannon Zimmerman, talk about the healthcare policies that you do support and which you'd like to see come before the legislature in the future.
So there's some differing philosophies, right, on this. I don't think anyone, regardless of party or affiliation, if you're a human being, you care about healthcare. You care about your family. You care about your kids. I think that the philosophical difference lies in, okay, so how do we do this? Kim, your question is a good one. I think parts of the ways that we do this is we have to pull back the curtain a bit. We have to increase and enhance transparency. We have to, rather than the answer being simply spend more money, we have to also look at the expense side and reducing the expense side of what is a very complex, very bloated overall system, right? When you wrap it all together from the healthcare product producers, pharmaceutical, insurance, it is a challenge and it is difficult on our local neighbors. And so when we talk about, you know, taking the free money from the federal government, I don't believe in throwing, you know, more good money, you know, at this issue. When you look at states who have done this, Arizona, a 300% increase in hospital emergency department visits because it was, frankly, more easier and convenient. Look, this past budget, we sent another $150 million in caregiver wages. We increased that. That's prioritizing health care. We sent $74 million. You know, I go to Hudson. These are nursing homes, and the care that they provide to people there, they're doing God's work. And I was so pleased. You know, I was on the phone, I remember, in joint finance, the morning of, before we went into committee, talking with our local nursing centers as we worked to send $74 million increase to them, which, I mean, they're taking care of, you know, mom and dad, grandma and grandpa. So healthcare is a priority. I think the answer lies in revamping the system, pulling back the curtain, making things transparent, and attacking the expense structure so that everyone, regardless of whether you're employed or not, has access to health care.
Speaking of access, you have access to these candidates, not only listening to their answers, but you can ask your questions. 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, although I see now our lines have filled again. But hang on, as people drop off, you'll have your opportunity. If you don't want to wait, you can email us at ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org, and you can email us your questions. Let's move next to Stephanie in River Falls. Stephanie, thanks for joining the West Side.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for having me. My question is to Rep. Zimmerman. My daughter, along with so many people in Wisconsin, struggled to get our unemployment after they were forced to stop work. My daughter could not even get a call back. Is this being fixed? And I will say that she did contact your office, and you were to your office, and they did get unemployment people to call my daughter back. But I do know that there are many still waiting 5 months out and have not received a single check.
Thank you, Stephanie, and Representative Zimmerman. The question directed to you, where are things right now on the unemployment payouts from the state?
Well, the first part of this answer is that no one perhaps could have contemplated or conceived of a pandemic and the additional burdens that may have put on infrastructure and systems. That said, the challenge was twofold, right? So first of all, the issue with fulfilling some of these very needed, very necessary unemployment claims was pointed back at IT systems. As a once-upon-a-time software engineer, I can tell you that I am perplexed and surprised why our state is in the IT cloud business, or it's actually not cloud, using mainframe. So it was pointed back to some mainframes that, frankly, we shouldn't be in the business of. We should be doing what the private sector does and more cost-effectively utilizing, larger companies who specialize in this. But unemployment is a serious matter. I talk to people locally, from those who cut hair to any form of service business. It is a serious, serious issue, and so many people went without. I don't know who your daughter was, Stephanie, because there was that many people that we had to work tirelessly to get them to even have received calls back. I can tell you this is a top priority. This is going to be fixed going forward so that this doesn't happen again. For the governor to simply point to COBOL as the reason for this, that's just not true. So, look, sorry that was your experience. I'm glad my office and we were able to help, but we're going to get this resolved going forward. And my sincere hope is that the economic recovery continues, the wonderful economic times we celebrate here in Western Wisconsin persist, and folks like your daughter never have to think about unemployment ever again.
Sarah Yacoub, your opportunity to respond to that as well.
I'm beginning to think my opponent and I are in different realities, like we're on some sci-fi show or something. We have stores going out of business that are sitting empty within the 30th Assembly District. The Republican Party has controlled Wisconsin up until 2018, essentially having a monopoly. So, what this issue speaks to, Stephanie, and I appreciate you calling in, my heart goes out to your daughter and your family, is the failure of my opponent and his party to invest in our infrastructure. It just hasn't been a priority for them. To say no one could have known, those are the words of somebody who ignores or doesn't understand science. And quite frankly, that level of ignorance and this level of power and leadership is so beyond reckless. We had weeks, if not months, of forewarning that this was coming before it hit Wisconsin. What was my opponent doing? He was vacationing in Florida. He still continues his taxpayer-paid vacation right now. He's not at the Capitol. He's sitting in his out-of-district Clifton residence, his home office, sitting here collecting a paycheck and not getting to work. So when you hear him talk about pulling back the curtain on spending for health care, when you hear him say this is a top priority, this is somebody who refuses to go to work or refuses to lead his party to step it up and get to work for the people of Wisconsin. Cut through the rhetoric, cut through the nonsense, and hold him accountable for his failures.
Let's talk about business as long as we're on the topic of employment. Shannon Zimmerman, you have many years of experience as a business owner in River Falls. What changes have you been a part of, and what changes would you like to see improve the business climate here in Western Wisconsin?
Less government. Government rarely, if ever, does anything efficient. And the businesses that I have seen be successful are when you let entrepreneurs do what they are best at. And I think that ways that we can do that, and I have regularly work with countless businesses in this area, having now started another company similar to the one I once started in the 90s, hiring again locally. I am intimately familiar with all of the influences that affect our Western Wisconsin companies and businesses. And the way that we do that is by making sure that we are not implementing greater tax burdens on them. So I advocate, and I will continue to believe, that your hard-earned money is best served in your pocket, not the states, not the federal governments. And when you do that with companies, they're able to reinvest into their own businesses, into adding staff, adding new services, new products, and so forth. You know, we have in River Falls, for example, the Innovation Center. This is a collaborative effort between the university and private sector business where we're literally establishing an incubator for new ideas, new concepts, because this is an area where we have so much intellectual property, so many bright people that want to go off and start their dream business. We need to make sure that government doesn't make it tougher on them. So I would advocate for lower tax and get government out of the way, and these entrepreneurs, these companies will flourish and will return to. Maybe I am watching a different movie before COVID, but, you know, St. Croix County, we're at 2% unemployment. Those are high-class problems when our challenge is finding workers for our local jobs.
Sarah Yacoub, many residents of the 30th Assembly District commute to Minnesota for work. How can Wisconsin offer jobs with competitive wages and benefits that keep people working in our state instead of crossing the border?
Absolutely. Well, we could undo the damage of Governor Walker, a line that is towed by my opponent. Act 10 did so much to destroy labor in Wisconsin and to incentivize young families moving out of state where they can get paid the value of their work. You know, it's interesting to hear my opponent with his business experience say these things. It is not smart business for most companies to have to expand into rural broadband. And yet we need broadband to start businesses, for farmers to get their work done, for first responders to be able to connect with the various entities that they communicate with when responding to an emergency. It's an educational need. It's an economic need. It's, quite frankly, a public safety issue. And what we've seen is a failure on the part of my opponent to secure the funding, to make it a priority, to make broadband accessible to everybody and affordable. And, you know, we saw last spring when we went virtual with schools, I can't tell you how many families expressed to me that they had to sit in a parking lot so that their child could communicate with their teacher. Now, I understand my opponent of being of privilege doesn't have these issues, but we need a representative who understands the needs of working families and who will actually go to bat on these issues. And one last point, you know, he talks about less government and entrepreneurs. This is somebody who started his business with Wisconsin tax dollars. And, you know, he, if I'm read correctly, he incorporated it out of state, which I imagine has some implications for how much Wisconsin taxpayers are getting back from their investment. But, you know, this is somebody who spent our tax dollars on Foxconn. He crammed that failure, that blunder down our throats as a good business idea when anybody paying attention knew it was a disaster. And how many small businesses, Shannon, could that Foxconn money have brought to our community? How much of an investment could we have made in our broadband, in our people, in our companies, in our entrepreneurs, our small farms, our medium-sized farmers, and even our big farms? And you went and were a rubber stamp for Robin Voss. So please don't sit here and tell me that this is a priority, you're invested in our business. Because, you know, quite frankly, I've been watching. I've been watching how you vote, and I'm tired of it, and we deserve better.
Shannon Zimmerman, since she addressed that question to you, particularly regarding Foxconn, your opportunity to respond to that.
Sure. There's a lot of things in there. So I'll do my best here to try and be effective in this response. We increased broadband spending by $30 million. I actually, my office reached out to the governor's office in this difficult period that we're in, and recommended using and directing some of the CARES Act money to specifically address the issues that were raised. Broadband is a serious issue, and we need it improved desperately. And that is one way that we can do that. just to correct one thing, I think Wisconsin Credit Union River Falls were getting our business started. So just to clarify there. Foxconn, let's talk about when I started my business. So we started our business, we were probably year four or five, six, somewhere in that general time frame, and business was going well, to all the credit of the local great people that work there. And similar in overall structure to Foxconn, the state of Wisconsin, we were looking at different places to build a building to house our company. obviously, we were, Minnesota was competing for this this opportunity, and Wisconsin had a program that structurally said, look, you know, we'll offer you $50,000, but you've got to create 30 jobs and build your building here and have those jobs here. Well, we did that and then some. They held their part. We had those tax credits. And the company has gone on to employ over 300 people here and was, in fact, in 2011, St. Croix County's large business of the year. So, you know, every now and again, government programs like that are meant to do that. And in the case of Foxconn specifically, although it can be a bit of a talking point, they only earn when they spend and when they hire. So I was familiar personally, probably one of the only ones in the legislature to do so. And look, it's worked out great for Hudson and River Falls. I go to the grocery store and still see people that we have hired over the years as a result of a model such as that. So that's really all I have to say about it.
That's Shannon Zimmerman, the current state representative of the 30th Assembly District. He's on with his opponent in the fall election, Democrat Sarah Yacoub of Hudson. Still time to add your questions to the mix, and a line is now open at 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or you can email ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back talking with the candidates in the 30th Assembly District. They are Sarah Yacoub of Hudson and Shannon Zimmerman of River Falls. Yacoub is the Democrat, Zimmerman the Republican incumbent. Let's move now to the phones again, 800-228-5615, your number to call. And in this case, we're going to be speaking with Brian from Hudson. Brian, thanks for calling the West Side.
Hey, thanks. I will keep it short and simple. My question is for Shannon Zimmerman. I'm curious as to why Mr. Zimmerman is running for and representing a district that he simply doesn't live in. His lived-in residence is in Clifton, not only in use, but per his tax records. His primary home that he occupies is simply non-district and not representative of those he's representing.
Shannon Zimmerman, this is the second time this has come up. Sarah Yacoub brought it up earlier. Your chance to respond to that.
Yeah, there is a complaint filed with the Elections Commission, and here's my response. First of all, the primary complainant is a donor to my opponent, so you know you can draw your conclusions. The timing, after 4 years, is 60 days before election, so once again, you can draw your conclusions. The facts are that I own multiple homes. I own many businesses, and I am frequently between them all. So the reason that these sort of political things come up is because what we don't want to be talking about is how I worked with the chancellor, how I worked with the state budget people to get UWRF, their science and technology money in this last cycle. The budget that we passed put a record $500 million in tax cuts. We don't want to talk about policy things. Instead, we want to talk about frivolous political accusations. So, no, I lawfully have my primary residence in the district, period.
Sarah Yacoub, your chance to respond to that.
Yes, Dean, thank you. There's a reason, Shannon, why the timing is now, because I've had resident after resident reach out to me and say I've made these complaints, I've brought this to the attention of various entities, and nothing is getting done. And stop lying to people. My kids go to school next to your son's duplex. I'm there all the time. You simply do not live there. Your lab has never been seen at that residence. There is no fence for your dog to stay in. You are never there. In fact, you live in your Clifton winery. If anyone looks at your home office, they will see that your windows are consistent with the home office during the stay-at-home order. The fact that you continue to lie about this speaks to your integrity, and it speaks to your lack of moral turpitude and, quite frankly, lack of fitness to be in office. The amount of fraud it takes and felonious conduct to make this work is so beyond shameful. I was rooting for you when you got elected in 2016. Rooting against your representative is like sinking your own boat. I was rooting for you. I took you at your word when you said you were independent, when you said you were for the people, and you demonstrated yourself to be an extremist, a rubber stamp for Robin Voss, somebody who promotes David Clark events with his picture as the feature, and now you're lying to us. You don't live in your son's basement. You live in Clifton. Give it up and stop lying.
I want to talk, and certainly I want to talk about what's fairly obvious, and that is polarization. The latest standoff between the Republican leadership in the legislature and the Democratic governor demonstrates a pronounced gap between the two parties when it comes to communicating the collaboration. We got an email from Christine. Please explain why the Republican leaders, Scott Fitzgerald and Robin Voss, will not call the legislature into session at Governor Evers' request. How can any of the representatives serve Wisconsinites when they refuse to meet and discuss legislation? And we can talk about that, and we have talked about that. But the broader question, I think, is, Sarah Yacoub, is the time for reaching across the aisle permanently dead?
Thank you for that question, Dean. It's an important one. And one of the things I hear consistently is cut the nonsense with a little more expletive and get to work. And you know what will do that for us? Fair maps. Over 76% of our district enthusiastically support fair maps. Fair maps and ending gerrymandering in Wisconsin are at the heart of accountability in government and a government that is by and for the people. The effect of gerrymandering is so toxic and corrosive and is why we see this hyperpartisanship. Representatives, legislators like my opponent, don't actually have to serve the community because he can hide behind the R next to his name on the ballot in a gerrymandered district. So he can do things like dump our money into Foxconn. He can do things like live outside the district. He can do things like take money out of our public schools, not show up to work in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of civil rights unrest, and count on getting away with it. I mean, Foxconn was before the 2018 election cycle, and he took a hit for it, but he ultimately prevailed. And so what that communicates is as long as we have these rigged maps, we have legislators who can chase their own political ambitions to the detriment of the needs of the community. And that's exactly what we've seen. We've seen Shannon go out and run for state senate and try to climb the ladder. We've heard of talks of, you know, where he wants to go with his money and his power. And, you know, we need somebody who's committed to public service to get up in there, roll up their sleeves, and be honest. You know, my bedside manner isn't always warm and fuzzy. I'm going to be direct. I'm going to be honest with people, but they can count on that from me. I'm going to have the hard conversations. You know, my opponent is somebody who is all about the appearances and things looking pretty on the outside, but doesn't have the fortitude to get in to the substance and really make things better for the people of Wisconsin. And you can fake it for a while, but eventually the truth catches up with you, and it's a price we're all going to continue to pay.
Shannon Zimmerman, I do want to ask you about reaching across the aisle, but the topic of redistricting has come up, and of course that will be an important one for the next legislature, which will be drawing the next maps, assuming that there isn't some other method that's developed. How would you respond to accusations of Republican gerrymandering when the political lines were redrawn in 2011, and how do you see Wisconsin doing maps in the future?
Perfect, Dean. I'll answer the gerrymandering, and then I do want to comment on, you know, division and polarization a bit as well, because I think it's important. You know, when I was elected in 2016, just to be honest, I didn't know gerrymandering was a thing. I've spent my entire professional career in the private sector and business and so forth, and not even really thinking much about that. After serving in office, learning about, you know, these sort of claims and these sort of things, I actually did an interview with a local River Falls attorney here probably a year ago or so, and you know, it was a good conversation, and I think, you know, this gentleman is certainly a Democrat, so it was a good conversation because we really got into the heart and the depth on this a little bit, because I think it is universally true that everyone wants fair maps, of course. And so, candidly, not knowing much about it, I started to research it and dig in to understand, you know, what happened and what's the sequence of events. And the challenge that I struggle with is, while we want that outcome, I think the issue becomes in how we do that. So, for example, in the state of Wisconsin, you know, when I dug into this, I found that there's just geographically a dramatic concentration of Democrat voters in the urban areas, Madison, Dane County area, Milwaukee, in that area. And so as you move out across the state, you find more Republicans and there's just more distribution. And so, for example, you know, in the 2018 election, Tammy Baldwin won 20 of the assembly districts that were won by Republicans. The 10th Senate was long time held by Sheila Harsdorf and was Republican, and it's changed. So the challenge here is, I agree that we want fair maps. I'm not going to dispute that. It comes down to the how. And finally, you know, one of the ways that people have discussed, you know, potentially doing this is really gerrymandering. You know, we're going to have a line coming out of a major urban area. So I'm all ears about this. It's in our Constitution that this is taken up by the legislature in accountable elected role, not unelected bureaucrat. I agree with that. So, now, on the division and polarization, because I think this is important, I want to tell the world that what you watch sometimes on the news and on social media and all the same talking points, when you get to Madison and you're behind, you know, the door sometimes, people get on better than you think. And I wish sometimes that the theatrics would stop, because I think about, number one, the bills that I have voted for. I think this number might be give or take a point. I think last session, 97% of the bills were voted bipartisan. I think about some of the great conversations. Some of my best friends in the assembly are Democrats. So I think the media does a great job of dividing us all when it really shouldn't be the case. Yeah, there's some issues we're not going to agree on, just like there is in our personal lives and in business. But we can find a middle ground, and that's exactly what we need to do, and not let the ultra-left or the ultra-right dictate the narrative for us all.
In the show opener, I mentioned that the 30th Assembly District is the only legislative district in Wisconsin located entirely within the Twin Cities metropolitan area. Shannon Zimmerman, how have you seen your district's proximity to Minneapolis and St. Paul impact your work as a state representative?
We are seeing a lot of different things happening right now. So, for example, I'm running into a lot of new people in the district moving over from Minnesota. You know, we've got some pretty beautiful areas over here, which is creating kind of both new challenges and opportunities, right? You know, when River Falls does a study in the city council to find out that we're at minimum 300 single-family homes short compared to demand right now. Those are opportunities for our local builders, our local electricians, plumbers, et cetera. So there's no question that Western Wisconsin is on a rocket ship. We're going to continue to grow. This is going to require thoughtful understanding. For me personally, my pitch is that, look, I've coached, I've raised kids, I've started businesses, I still have businesses. I'm active in a variety of ways in this community, and that's the type of representative it's going to take for such a dynamic, high-growth area in the state of Wisconsin.
Sarah Yacoub, what challenges and opportunities does that proximity to the Twin Cities provide for a legislator representing your district?
Yes. You know, we are in a media bubble. So my opponent likes to rely on these narratives about polarized media because it polls well and it plays to his base well. But the reality is, people in the 30th Assembly District are not connected with the news coming out of Madison and Milwaukee. There are not good channels of news. We're in the Twin Cities news media market. That's the reason, the good part of that is we don't see our commercials all the time because they're so bloody expensive that they're cost prohibitive. But what that means is people aren't informed about what my opponent said. Well, they hear what he says come election time, and where he plays like the good old, you know, homeboy from our hometown who's nice and moderate. They don't, unless they're policy wonks or they're nerdy, they don't really get an opportunity to be plugged in to how he's voting. You know, he talked about the bipartisan votes. The Republican legislators control what bills come to a vote, and most of those bills with bipartisan support are not substantive in nature. We're not seeing votes on the issues that affect Wisconsinites the most because the Republicans aren't interested in bringing them to a vote. In terms of the good news of being a Twin Cities suburb is that we're getting people from other places in the country. We're getting people who understand what competent government looks like and who are accustomed to a higher bar of public service. So one of the complaints I've heard time and time again that my opponent is just not responsive to constituent concerns, constituent calls, constituent anything. And that when he does respond, it's very condescending and, you know, it's really off-putting and that they don't feel like he goes to bat for them. Having people move into the area who know what public service looks and sounds like, who know what competent government looks like. You know, I'm not some big government, you know, socialist, communist, however he's going to try to spin this because he's got nothing else. I believe in the free market. I believe in a balanced approach, but I also believe in public service and honesty and integrity in government. And, you know, going back to that question about what we do about fair maps, notice how he left out the part of the majority party. He's talking about how he wants fairness, but his party leadership is unapologetically seeking a supermajority in the legislature. And they're spending lots and lots of money on my opponent's race to secure that. And what that means is that one party will have the opportunity to overturn our governor's veto. So they already treat their legislative colleagues on the other side of the aisle as irrelevant when it's convenient. And now they're going to seek to treat the entire executive branch as irrelevant. And, you know, that is not balanced. That is not good government. You know, fighting Bob Lafayette, a Republican governor, was a champion for good government. So this isn't a Democrat-Republican thing. This is an integrity thing. This is the people of Wisconsin saying we've had enough with the nonsense. We want accountability in government, and we're tired of the shenanigans. And this is the election that I'm asking people to stand up and hold people accountable for their failures in leadership, starting with my opponent.
Got just a little time left. Maybe ask you to limit your answers to 30 seconds for this one. You're running as part of a ballot that also includes a presidential race. The national conventions for both of those parties ended recently. I'll ask you both, what do you think of the man at the top of the ticket? Sarah Yacoub first, what do you think of Joe Biden?
You know, Joe Biden is someone who is tried. He is someone who is a proven leader, somebody who can build coalitions, who has the relationships worldwide that can hit the ground running on day one. He selected a woman, a former district attorney, with the experience, with a career fighting for justice, fighting for victims and survivors of crime, somebody who intimately knows the barriers of wellness in her role as a prosecutor within the criminal justice system, that we have a ticket that is defined by empathy. Empathy, understanding, compassion, but also common sense grit. These are two people who know how to get stuff done and who know how to unite a country that is so deeply divided right now. You know, it's interesting to hear.
Let me give Shannon Zimmerman a chance to answer this question. How do you feel about Donald Trump?
Well, Donald Trump doesn't have the same communication style that I do. We would not probably align there. But we do align in terms of looking at life through the checkbooks of the families at home. Less regulation that makes it difficult for businesses and so forth. Sending more of the monies back to those who have earned it. Because when parents have the financial means to provide, to take care of, to pay for Little League, whatever the case is, as we saw over the past few years, areas thrive. They absolutely thrive. And I want to see this continue because we live in a fantastic part of Wisconsin, and I do not want to see us go backwards. I want to see us go forward.
Shannon Zimmerman and Sarah Yacoub, thank you for joining us today. Catherine Thomas is our producer. Kate Springer manages our archives. Patrick Eikens is on publicity, and Sue Johnson and Bonnie Clark are working with our transcriptions of these debates. Next week, it's the 92nd Assembly District debate. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.